Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, the show has changed, but the shame remains the same.
What are you, MacGruber?
Deep Space Nine is a less loved show than Next Generation. It did not penetrate the public consciousness like Next Generation, right?
I feel like
so when you tell people you're doing a Deep Space Nine podcast, I feel like
it sounds way dorkier.
Totally. Oh, God. Yeah. To the degree that I'm telling people that I just do a Star Trek podcast, and I leave it at that.
I think within Trek fandom, Deep Space Nine is the more beloved show, but I don't think it ever had a crossover success the way TNG did.
I feel like TNG people are my people. I feel like if you say that you're a DS9 person, then I feel like you're better than me.
Yeah. We're just here in the cheap seats, the TNG bleachers. You're in that Deep Space Nine skybox.
Right. Yeah. Enjoy those mini corn dogs. You ever sit in a suite for anything?
No, never. I guess I just don't have enough. Like, you know, nobody is like, you know what Ben would like? Getting to go to a suite. You know, that
no
thought has never crossed anybody's mind.
No one looks at you and assumes sweet man.
Yeah, no.
That sweet life, though, pretty nice. I've been in a suite once, and I've been in the super great baseball seats behind home plate another time. I might prefer the super close to home plate seats to the suite life. There's something about, like, you get your free food and bev in both places, and that's fun. But when you're sitting in a seat next to home plate, you get to fill out an order sheet, Ben.
Ooh.
And I'm here to tell you, when you fill out an order sheet that requests a hot dog bun filled with mini corn dogs, and that hot dog bun comes filled with mini corn dogs, you realize...
You were trying to throw curveballs at the kitchen staff, is what you're saying?
Yeah. But,
and they're like, just clocking them out of the park?
That's what a rich person's life is like.
It's just the easiest batting practice of all time.
It's corn dog wealthy. Like the power to do anything with mini corn dogs. No matter how depraved.
Oh yeah, I heard that Moscow tape has a lot of corn dog stuff in it.
Oh, don't ruin corn dogs for me.
If you don't think Trump is corn dog wealthy, you are wrong.
I just don't want them to be ruined by that guy of all people.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm drinking something different on the pod today.
Oh, really?
I am drinking a glass of sangria.
Really?
Do you like sangria?
Really?
Yeah. I'm drinking from the 1.5 liter bottle that you can get at Costco.
Oh, man.
This Costco sangria is no joke, man. It is
You're not
really
making
good.
Your own. You're buying the store-bought sangria.
I'm buying the store-bought sangria with the screw top. Ben, guess how much a 1.5-liter bottle of Costco sangria is.
Oh, I don't know. $15?
$6.89.
Man, if only winos were members.
No kidding. It's delicious.
Sangria is a drink that I really enjoy, but I feel very cautious around because the most shameful I've ever acted while drunk was a sangria drunk.
Oh boy, I've tented my fingers under my chin, Ben. My elbows are on the table. I am all ears.
I don't remember a lot of the particulars of this.
Is this an apparently story, Ben?
I was drinking sangria at a friend's place in the East Village one time. We were like having a backyard get together, and we had made a great big batch of sangria. And I don't really remember exactly what we were playing, but we were playing a drinking game where, like, losing would provoke the group building consensus towards something you had to do as punishment. And I was down to my shorts. I was like, they were steering me toward getting nude, and I like lost my nerve and like tearfully ran out of the party, like grabbed my clothes and like ran down the street with wad of clothes in my arms.
Oh,
and then
no, what?
Left a voicemail for my friend who was hosting the party, like apologizing for my behavior while still super inebriated.
While still unclothed?
While still unclothed, while still in the great shame that I was feeling over all of this. So yeah, it's like it's such a painful memory that sometimes I don't want to go back to it with drink. But wow. I do like a nice sangria.
Wow, I'm really sorry to hear that hurt you so much. Point to the part of the sangria bottle that hurt you, Ben.
I guess the opening.
Wow. How old were you for this story?
I was probably like 22 or something like
that. Oh, yeah, that's the right time for that sort of thing.
I didn't really drink until it was legal for me to drink. So I had none of high school to like get used to loosening up, you know?
I am not this type of person, but I have a good friend of mine that I grew up with for whom the move, once becoming inebriated, was just to take off his shirt. like that level of comfort with his own body was just like the deal. And it sounds like you have very different feelings, W/R/T, your body and its relationship to alcohol.
We've gone to pools together, Adam. You know what my body looks like.
I don't, because you're wearing a t-shirt and jeans in the pool. you say that it's all part of your deal to shrink your 501s, but I mean, this has happened so many times, I'm beginning to doubt that you have 30 pairs of 501 jeans.
Well, this was a very horrible episode from my past that I don't relish reliving, Adam. But the episode we came here to talk about today is also about a horrible episode from the past. Should we get into the episode?
Nice pivot, Ben. Yeah, let's do. It's Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 7. Dax, or as I like to call it, the measure of an ankylosaur.
This episode starts with Julian Bashir and Jadzia Dax. I think Bashir is on a date and Dax is at a working lunch. And they're both at the Rainforest Cafe. And he's like,
he's like, you know, like, how about another cup of coffee? And she's like, oh, sorry, it'll keep me up. And he's like, I've got ideas about the ways to keep you up.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Dog, you are in a work environment. That for sure rises to the level of an HR complaint.
How many HR complaints do you think Dax has filed in her hundreds of years of life? It's probably, like, she's probably, like, no stranger to it in every form she's taken.
Mm-hmm. she's filed them, and she's also had them filed against her.
Ben, I think even before this scene, we get a commander's log saying that O'Brien has taken Keiko back to Earth for her mom's 100th birthday,
mm-hmm.
thus giving us the reason for his absence from the episode. Ben, I was aching for this to be the B story. How much would you like to cut back and forth from the station to Earth and O'Brien in, like, the Keiko family living room, like, absorbing birthday festivities?
Just, like, checking his watch. Well,
like, getting self-defense drunk, like, at the birthday party. Miles, haven't you had enough punch? Get off my back!
Oh, man. O'Brien's absence doesn't really wind up being much of a factor in this episode, does it?
No.
I wonder if it was that Colm Meaney had something better to do, or if it was like, there's no really a great way to write him into this one, so let's just get him out of here.
Colm Meaney didn't tell anyone, but he's at an audition for another show.
Well, they're having this hang. Dax is, like, totally disconnected from the moment, is, you know, doing iPad reading or whatever, and lurking in the shadows are some temple-loafed men who are identifying Dax as Dax.
Dax.
And they tail her, and they really, like, look like they're up to no good from head to toe. You know, they've got the hoods, but they also have, like metallic gloves and stuff. Like, they look pretty nasty, and Dax is off by herself. Like, Julian has proposed that they go back to her room and fuck.
That's not necessary, Julian.
Oh. Well, good night, then.
And, like, when the second she leaves, he's like, maybe isn't no. Like, he does
which is
that,
like,
that awful math that too many dudes do, which is like, she didn't specifically say no.
Finally elevating Bashir up to the level of ultra skin crawly.
Yeah, right. So he's following her back to her place and catches her
Dax!
Getting abducted in the hallway by these creeps with the temple loaf. And instead of calling security, he just, like, rushes into the fray, pretty quickly gets his ass whooped, and the temple loaf guys take off Jadzia's comm badge and move on. They drag her out of there.
Bashir is the form of chaotic patriarchal in that he won't take no for an answer about walking Dax home from coffee, but he also can't bring himself to hit a woman during this fight scene.
Women are precious, Adam.
Like, he pulls his punch, and that's why he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah. He has completed his character reveal as a total fucking creep. So that's our throw to theme, and when we come back, he's like coming out of a daze, slumped on the floor of the hallway, and he radios up to ops that Jadzia has been attacked and that he needs help, and they identify her location as being right next to him, and he's like, no, they took her comm badge off. Nice try, guys. And so they like lock down the station. They're, you know, closing doors, shutting down pylons, sealing off levels 4 through 12. Why not levels all? Who knows? but yeah, they're
doing a hard target search through every
outhouse, chicken house, hen house.
Right.
And the people that are abducting Dax, like, know where to go to avoid being on security cameras.
They know, like, where there's the security camera that does that swish pan back and forth. Like, they know at what point to walk down the hallway and cut the corner so that they don't show up.
They do that thing when you leave your garage where you step over the invisible electric I-beam.
Exactly. Ben, I was thinking, like, is there a limit to how long and thin Odo could make himself? Like, could he turn himself into a string of Christmas lights that went all the way around the station and down every hallway, thus making him, like, a security system that covered every square foot?
If he can get as small as a rat, what is the upper limit to how big he could get?
That's what I'm saying. I want to know more about him, is my point. I have so many questions.
Very interesting thing you have proposed. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody bring that up.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
They've, like, figured out where, like, which ship they're going to, because they've narrowed it down to, like, there's a handful of ships that are faster than runabouts. So they would know that we wouldn't be able to chase them, and they're going for this one particular one. They put up force fields. The guys have a way to dismantle the force fields. They get out of there. The tractor beam has been knocked out of commission, and Sisko manages to flush whatever's gumming up the works out just in time to grab their ship before it warps out of the system.
It's a real close call, because the entire time this hooded sweatshirt crew has been one step ahead of the crew throughout. Like,
yep.
How did they not realize that their tractor beam didn't work until now?
You are fully torqued, bro.
I guess this is where Chief O'Brien's absence kind of plays in an interesting way. It's like,
oh yeah, that makes sense.
The like fact that the station is always kind of breaking down is an especially pressing issue right now.
You gotta believe O'Brien would use any excuse not to go back to Earth for this for this mother-in-law 100th birthday. Like, the survival of everyone on the station would be a good reason, but I guess not.
I can just picture him suggesting to Keiko, like, you know, a little time away from each other. We've been in each other's hair since we moved in here, you know? I certainly have gone through that with my move to L.A., you know? We stayed in some Airbnbs where there was just no space, like in the car all day going and looking at different apartments. It gets a little frictive, you know?
I've said it a million times. You want to miss the person you're with. That's healthy.
Yeah.
Not that O'Brien would actually miss her. TBH.
He'd be down at Quark's getting hammered whole goddamn time.
Yeah.
Well, they get these guys back aboard. They just come out of the airlock and, you know, Odo.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
When the security detailer there with their phasers, and these guys come out. Jadzia looks a little, like, dazed, almost drugged in a way.
Yeah, it's weird.
Never really addressed.
No.
This
I
dude
don't
is-
recall her getting, like, roughed up to the point where she was knocked out, right? In the melee.
No, I mean, she definitely looked dazed when they were, like, dragging her around, though.
If anyone should be dazed, it's Bashir, who just got his fucking ass kicked in that hallway.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have a lot to contribute to the storyline after this, so he's probably just on bed rest.
Yeah.
We meet the main guy of the abductors, introduces himself to Sisko as Elon Tandro, and he is from a planet that the Federation has an extradition treaty with, and he is like, hey, listen, I was just doing what our treaty says I can do, which is unilaterally extradite anybody I want if they've been accused of a crime on my planet. The fuck kind of treaty allows for this?
That's a terrible treaty. Who wrote that?
Please, Reva, we need you. We need you!
There are lots and lots of countries that don't extradite prisoners from to the U.S. if they're accused of crimes that could have capital punishment applied to them, because most of the rest of the world does not have capital punishment.
Who wrote that treaty? Henry Kissinger?
The Federation is like, yeah, we'll extradite an enlisted serving officer, like a commissioned serving officer to a planet that is going to kill her if she's found guilty. No problem.
Wow. It really, I mean, if the ship had escaped, how different of the story would we have gotten? Like, diplomatically, it would have been a whole lot more charged up, I think.
Yeah, this would have been that, like, episode where the Singapore government wanted to cane that guy.
Right.
I mean, yeah, like, the episode we would have gotten would have been, like, Spy Game, where, you know, the Federation doesn't want to have a diplomatic incident with Klystron 4, but Sisko, you know, calls in favors and gets a couple of Black Hawk helicopters with special ops guys to descend on the prison and extract Dax under the cover of night, you know?
Operation Dinnerout is a go, confirmed!
Correct. Dinnerout is a go.
Klystron 4 sounds like a caustic, like... tub and tile cleaner that when you buy from the guy at Home Depot, he's like, look, man, you really got to wear a mask when you use this. Yeah. The fumes are pretty intense.
Mask and gloves, or you're going to have a bad time.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my little state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
So Sisko is like, well, like, we're gonna look into this, and we're sending a message to your planet to, like, confirm whether your warrant is real. And he sits down with Odo and is like, man, this sucks. They were just trying to abduct her. And Odo's like, yeah, well, if she did the murder that they're accusing her of, then she should burn. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? This happened 30 years ago. This wasn't Jadzia Dax. It was Curzon Dax.
So this is a story about whether or not the Ankylosaur is able to be punished for crimes no matter what container it inhabits, which is a fairly fascinating question.
Yeah. It would be insane for this to be the first time that question was encountered in this universe. Like,
exactly.
And
there are lots of Trill around.
Even the king of the trio need himself a queen.
They pay a little lip service to the idea that they're going to look into legal precedent W/R/T Ankylosaur continuity. But it's never really paid off.
So they got to bring in an arbiter to mediate this argument between the Federation as represented by Sisko and this Elon Tandro, right?
Well, let's explain why. Like, and this is, like, I think my favorite part of the episode is that they find a legal loophole, which is that Deep Space Nine is not technically a Federation jurisdiction. It's a Bajoran jurisdiction, and they have no extradition treaty with Klystron. So, like, the reason Tandro was doing all this cloak and dagger shit, it was more because he was worried that the issue of the fact that they're extracting her from a Bajoran jurisdiction was actually going to get in his way.
Which is fucked up because, like, what he did is illegal, and yet they don't seem to consider that a punishable offense.
Right. Like, it's like those guys that beamed onto the promenade and started shooting a couple of episodes ago, and they're like, well, that's just your culture, man. Can't judge.
They are super permissive here.
It's a very groovy station that Sisko is running. So they bring on this mediator lady.
I am 100 years old. I do not have time to squander listening to superfluous language.
Who is a Bajoran, some kind of Bajoran legal authority, though you could confuse her for Klingon based on the kind of gavel she brings with her.
You could also confuse her with Rashaan Uxbridge. Yeah. Which...
Well, we thought that it might make us fall in love all over again. It worked.
The story becomes far more interesting if you consider that it may in fact be her and she's been on the run from Kevin the whole time. Like, maybe she didn't... Now, everyone knows that Rashaan Uxbridge died on the bridge of the Enterprise D, but what my theory presupposes is maybe she's just hiding from Kevin Uxbridge?
Benjamin Shishko. I'll have you know that there's someone else who does not recognize extradition treaties on board Deep Space Nine, and it is the Dode.
A colleague of mine from the Q Continuum was recently aboard your station and clued me into the situation there. I was under the impression that the Hoosnack had taken the life of my wife and that Captain Picard had taken the life of my real doll replacement of her. In point of fact, she has been living incognito among the Bajorans.
You could see how this would be very sexually confusing for me. As before this time, I did not know I could be so attracted to Bajorans. Yet here I am.
Now I'm
for
in
those
the
little nose ridges.
Now I'm in the bizarre catch-22 of strongly considering killing all Bajorans everywhere, but also being totally erotically charged up by a Bajoran nose bridge.
I've turned the open shine around to closed on my real doll shop. I've packed a bindle. And I'm on my way to your station, Francisco. I plan on having this reserved shortly.
Tell the Bajorans, the spiritual people they are, to get ready to have a god in their presence. A god who is DTF.
Really nice to see Anne Haney back again. She's got just a great carriage about her. I really like her. I mean, as Elsra Nora, she's a total hard ass.
Yeah.
Who really does not have any patience for any guff.
Totally. And is there to hear out the claims that Sisko and Elon are making and make a totally dispassionate call about what to do here. The sword of Damocles is fully hanging over Dax, which is why it is so disconcerting for Sisko that Dax doesn't seem to give a shit.
This was just as frustrating to me because, you know, on and on, Sisko is banging.
When did Jadzia Dax get replaced with Floor Mat Dax?
They're really going to have a hard time cramming that ankylosaur into a floor mat format. Cisco's come on. It's fucking crazy to me that you're hundreds of years old and you have no self-preservation instinct in the face of a capital crime. And it's
also,
just as frustrating to me, too. There is no reason given why... I mean, there's a flimsy reason given why she doesn't want to talk about the circumstances that have put her here. But there is no reason given as to why she does not seem willing to defend herself at all. There is a defense. And if you don't want to go with the defense that's embarrassing, you can still defend yourself.
Yeah, when Sisko is working through what their defense strategy is going to be here, he gives Kira the job of looking into legal precedent for Trills, which is you have a Trill on your station that has been a diplomat and been in the mix for a long time. Go ask her.
They bring in this Trill expert witness, DJ Qualls, and the whole reason they bring him in is because Dax won't defend herself in any way.
Mm-hmm.
The only person more irritated about the circumstance than Sisko is Kira. Mm-hmm. And I keep coming back to this question, Ben, which is how do you direct Nana Visitor? Because I feel over and over again, it just must be telling her, all right, that's great. Let's do another take, but this time give me a little less irritation. She is just utterly irritated. Her resting state is irritation. Yeah. And it's what I love about her, but like, good Lord, she is like, she's taking a blowtorch to everyone and everything around her just at all times.
Like the funnest scene for sure in the episode is when the guy tries to like duck out of having a conversation with her by saying, I'm talking to your commander. And Sisko goes,
oh, yeah.
No, you're talking to my first officer right now, buddy. Like he totally is unhooking the leash from her choke collar in that moment.
Like
sick 'em, girl.
All I want in my life is a Kira to do all my negotiating for me. Like, I want her to buy my car. I want her to do all my business dealings. I want her to negotiate on my behalf, because she is a monster in that way, in a way that I really love, and in a way that I am not.
I would pay her $4.50 an hour for that.
Fucking A.
Odo gets sent to Klystron 4, and initially he's just reporting back from planet computer panel. Like, we don't see the planet at all for a long time, and it's him saying, like, you know, like, this general that Dax stands accused of having murdered is a kind of legendary dude around here. When he got killed, his army went so ape that they wound up winning the war. And so he's kind of like a hero of the state.
There are statues of him all over the place.
And is only survived by his wife, and her son is the guy that's there trying to kill Dax. So Sisko puts him on going and meeting up with the general's wife. And she turns out to be portrayed by another lady from TNG history. Vianula Flanagan.
That's right. Bringing back the heavy hitters.
Seriously, this is Data's mom, right?
It's true. Yeah. Unclear as to whether or not she is a robot person in this universe. But there's like two parallel, really interesting questions at play. There's the whole like the trial being about the difference between the memory of a thing and the complicity in that thing, and that's right. Interesting to me. But there's also like the thing with the widow, and that like, and she's sort of a Jackie Kennedy figure, right? Like, what happens when an imperfect person gets lionized, you know, and what's the consequence to the person who's left behind? Like, this is pretty heady stuff. Like, really, really interesting questions. Like, on the heels of a word salad episode, you know? Like, at this point in the story, I was like, where did this come from? This is very sophisticated.
Yeah, it's and it's also interesting in like a future context, because like the way Dax is behaving winds up getting explained to be like the like symbiont Dax trying to preserve the honor of Anina Tandro, like on the idea that her having been had infidelities with her husband would be so shameful to her and so damaging to like their culture's sense of history that she won't do it. You know, like Dax refuses to defend herself, basically to protect this woman.
But it just seems so unnecessary. The point I was trying to make earlier that I probably made inarticulately was that, like, there is still a defense even without that. Like, you can choose not to make that a part of your evidence while still making the attempt.
Right. And like the defense that Sisko is pursuing doesn't hinge on the facts of the case ever coming out.
Right.
It's entirely based on whether Jadzia Dax is considered a distinct person from Curzon Dax or not. And
right, and I want to know what Jadzia Dax's opinion is on that. Like, that would be really interesting to me.
It seems like kind of both, you know? Like, based on what the other Trill says, it's like, yeah, like, from some perspectives, you could call it a distinct person, and others, you couldn't. And, Like, that's that guy's opinion, but, like, who cares about that guy? We don't know who that guy is.
There's a lot of muddying of the ankylosaur waters here.
I believe it's pronounced Brontosaurus.
In that, you know, like, a number of different witnesses, you know, like, DJ Qualls makes the claim that, you know, once the symbiotic relationship is established, it is a mutual personality merging between ankylosaur and host. And yet Dr. Bashir makes the case that, you know, there are two separate brainwave patterns going on. So there's, like, on the one hand, there is proof that they are totally commingled beings, and on the other hand, there's scientific proof that they're separate. And so one could make the case either way at this point in the trial, that either there is a inherent responsibility that a current ankylosaur would be responsible for the past container's actions, and also the exact opposite.
They talk a lot about in this hearing the fact that it is not a trial, like they're not attempting to establish guilt or not. It seems like everybody treats it as a foregone conclusion that guilt would be established if Dax gets extradited.
Right.
That seems weird, right? Do they have, like, that little faith in the Klystron justice system?
Yeah, not a great reputation over there.
They've got the death penalty and also play fast and loose with the facts when sentencing somebody. What does that remind me of?
Sounds like a real kangaroo court over there.
Real drumhead situation.
Yeah.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
The reveal when they find out that that Curzon was banging Anina is like really changes the game, and like she winds up deciding to go with Odo to Deep Space Nine to like make a very dramatic last minute entry into the courtroom to say like enough is enough, this is all a charade, and the reason that Curzon couldn't have sent the transmission that caused my husband to get killed is because I was like holding on to his penis at the moment that he would have had to do it.
Mother, what are you talking about?
So she proves the innocence of Curzon with her quote unquote embarrassing admission.
Which makes it even more weird. Like they have an alibi for everybody else who could have sent the transmission.
Right. So it's still total speculation as to who the actual murderer was.
Right.
So that part is unresolved. But the other part that is so deeply unsatisfying about the end of this episode is that the question of Dax's guilt, you know, had Curzon been guilty of such a thing, like the overarching question of guilt, W/R/T, like, containers and ankylosaurs is totally unresolved, and that is worth resolving.
I totally agree. I think they do some really good world building about what like the mechanics of being a joined trill are, and it's interesting to learn that like lots of trill aren't joined, and that it's like something that you have to compete to get, and it's a big honor.
Yeah.
That stuff is all super interesting. But yeah, like the Measure of a Man resolves with like we all like walk away from that episode feeling pretty confident that we've seen a compelling argument in favor of an artificial life form being a full person with all the rights and responsibilities that confers. And in this episode, I don't think that they had the nerve to kind of answer their own questions. Yeah.
That is what makes Measure of a Man such a great episode, and why this is so unsatisfying at its conclusion here. Like, I'm totally with you on that. To put you on the spot, Ben, do you think that the crimes of a previous Trill are on the current Trill's container, if you had to decide, given the evidence of this episode?
I would say no. And I think partly that's because I'm kind of naturally predisposed to think that like punishment is not necessarily a great way to deal with crime. Like, I don't think that, like, the majority of crime would be is being, like, effectively deterred by the idea of punishment. Like, the reason I don't go around breaking into cars is not really that I would get thrown in jail if I did. It's that like, I respect other people's shit, you know? And I think that, like, most of the time when people are committing crimes, it is because they are either desperate or mentally ill or a combination of the two, or are, you know, just unable to sympathize with others. And so, like, I mean, I think the reason that I don't side with Elon's way of thinking in this is the same reason that I don't, like, I think that, like, the justice system in the United States is badly broken. It's like, I think there are, like, if somebody commits a crime, like, even if the symbiont is, like, disproportionately responsible for the actions of the joint trill, I still don't think extradition should be honored.
Would you be for a form of, like, statute of body limitations? Like, because,
like, well, yeah, but he makes a great point there. Like, it's like running for the Mexican border, and the second the symbiont is in a different body, it's out of the jurisdiction or whatever.
Yeah, like, it's a fascinating question to consider that, you know, on the one hand, if Curzon had done the murder or had done something awful, like, try to consider a crime more awful than murder, like multi-murder. Like, what if Dax were truly evil? Like, and Dax was put into a truly innocent container. How do you punish the container for that? That's something that I wish this episode had the guts to ask and answer.
It's, like, so much more interesting of a premise than the, like, trashy 80s horror premise of, like, heart transplant of a murderer, and then that, sure, that person is, like, got the evil spirit within them or whatever.
We don't know or care who Ardalan Tandro is. Like, make him murdered in a grisly way. Make it awful. Like,
right.
We don't care about him. Like,
tell us the specifics of it. Do we think Dax is capable of that? And that's another question that they raise and don't really answer. Like, Sisko is trying to tell Odo, like, that's not who Dax is or who Curzon Dax was. And Odo's like, I don't give a fuck. Like, let's find out what the facts are.
Right. And that's where I'm at, too. But I just wish the crime was amplified. I wish the crime was true, because it would make the outcome matter in a way that it doesn't here. It's just sound and fury signifying nothing.
Dang. So did you like this episode, Adam?
In spite of its many, many flaws, I still like the attempt. I like that we've had a couple of slapsticky, non-toothy stories in the first half of season one. And this feels like the first attempt to go hard Trek.
Yeah.
And that feels good. And so I admire the attempt. It does not mean that I was satisfied by its conclusion. So I don't know. Like, maybe after the entire first season is over with, my answer would be different. But I think I'm more on the side of liking the episode than disliking the episode in spite of its many flaws.
Kind of wish that Arbiter had sent somebody to jail with that Ruripente brand gavel.
I kind of wish the Arbiter had called another expert witness. Someone who knows everything. Everywhere. Your Honor, I would like to make a deposition.
Your Honor, I will look past how distracted I am by your nose.
I see the way you handle that giant ball. It gives me all kinds of ideas.
You know, this body is just a shell that I made for myself, and it could really take on any form. I could increase the size of my balls however large you want. Is that what you want? Is that why you left me?
Look at me, Rishan.
I too have a nose bridge now. It's just that easy for me. I had no idea I was only a nose bridge away from your heart.
What I'm trying to say, baby, is that I can change.
Ben, do we have any Priority One messages?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It's from Ellen. It is for Tommy. The time that this message was preferred was before the show ends.
Oh, no. I mean, if that means Deep Space Nine, we're good.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's not what they meant, but I sure hope Tommy and Ellen are still listening. Message goes like this. Dear brother, happy birthday. It's a month early, but there are only 3 more episodes of this show, so it's now or never. Oh, no. This is heartbreaking.
It's very, very belated birthday at this point.
Thanks for recommending TGG to me. It's one of my favorite things in the world. I wasn't going to watch Discovery, but maybe we can make it through with the help of the new pod. And if it's awful, we can hate watch it together. Thanks, Tommy and Alan. Really sorry about the belation to this birthday message. We were very swamped at the
end
of the TNG
run. It's all Rez and Plavim's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy birthday nonetheless. Hope you're still around and you hear this message.
Yeah. Our next message is from Jane, and it is for Steve. Happy anniversary. It looks like this will air 2 months late, but better late than never. I'm so glad that I'm engaged to marry you, and I can't wait to do so. Then my weird will be inextricably linked with your weird forevermore. You are the best, and I love you. Ben and Adam, can you mash up Harry Picard with the schismed drop? I suppose that would sort of sound like, you just got schismed!
Those are two great tastes that don't taste very great together. Like peanut butter and applesauce.
Congratulations, Steve and Jane, on your anniversary. That sounds like you guys sound like a great couple.
Yeah, good match there. Good symbiotic match.
Mm-hmm. If you have enjoyed these P1s and don't mind that they're so late, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal message is $100 and a commercial message is $200. It's a great way to support the production of this show and get your message out there to lots and lots of fun, cool people.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I really had a hard time finding one in this episode. Maybe hearing yours will inspire me to make a decision. I know that's a dodge. It's a dodge we've occasionally made at this
point. I've for sure
show.
Done that to you several times.
And, yeah, what do you got?
I'm going to give it to the Trill Witness that they called. What did you say the guy's name was?
I called him DJ Qualls, given his uncanny appearance during... Given his uncanny resemblance to DJ Qualls.
Like I feel like this guy could clear everything up, but he just seems like he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to answer anybody's questions, and yet here he is.
He's like a magician that doesn't want to break character and just like slinks around doing hand gestures and like and like speaking mysteriously. Like, yeah, you're totally right.
Like, he could just be like, okay, well, like, listen, Trill is part of the Federation, and so if we're saying that this is a Federation matter, like, here is the legal precedent, and if not, like, here is why we arrived at that as the precedent. Like, he's a fucking lawmaker, right? He's like a member of Parliament or something.
If the Trill have been around for 1,000 years. They had to have come up with this problem before.
He's lived 7 lifetimes with this symbiont and is like a deer in headlights at the prospect of this question. It's so insane.
A smirk and a shrug is totally insufficient. Like, this guy's an idiot. And he's their expert witness.
Yeah.
Their case is fucked.
Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it may be Dax, in that she's so willing to just be the observer in her own life. Like, she is, talk about like sort of a meta existence. Like, she's a thing inside another thing who has then stepped back from her life to sort of observe the trial happening around her. Like, what a weird way to exist. And then, like, I suppose the only moment, the only thing that makes Bashir less of a dark figure is if Dax is totally in the driver's seat of that relationship.
Like, she's egging him on the entire time.
And is waiting to destroy him in the most, like, embarrassing public way. Like, that's the thing that I'm waiting for, is like the other shoe to drop on Bashir and for Dax to just destroy him. Like,
yeah.
That could be, but that's also like, this is me projecting story onto people where that story doesn't necessarily exist in the episode. So fairly flimsy Shimoda on my part, but I think that's the best I can do in this case. Fairly serious, sober episode.
Indeed.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 1, episode 8, The Passenger. A sinister alien criminal hides his consciousness in the brain of someone aboard the station. Man, talk about cheesy 80s horror concepts.
Yeah, I mean, okay. We're really, like, given what the first 8 episodes of this show have been and will be, like, I don't know that we could get a more disparate selection of storylines here. They're really all over the place.
This one feels like a weird one to butt up against the one we just watched, but we'll see how it goes. Right. Do you want to find out if we will be drinking a lot while doing?
All right, why not?
And our random number is 6. That means we will not be getting shithouse drunk while watching the episode.
Hmm. Saved again.
Saved again by randomness.
Well, one thing that saves us every time is the constructive, kind, and incredibly funny commiseration that happens at the end of every show on our many social media outlets. We've got Facebook and Twitter, Reddit, places all where our viewership gathers and talks about the mistakes we've made, the jokes we've made, and about the source material that we're discussing. So I'd highly encourage anyone who's interested in our show to participate in those conversations.
It is a great deal of fun. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for a lot of the other music that you hear on the show. And I would encourage anybody that's listening, if you like our show, to go to MaximumFun.org and check out all of the other great shows that they have on the network. There's a ton of great ones. And if you are moved by this show to help support its production, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate and become a monthly supporter, and it really, really helps. It's a real game changer for us.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which hides our own brains.
Cool!
Jean-Luc Picard, MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.